Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. When an angry mob of racist Americans confronted Central American immigrant children in the town of Murrieta, California last year, they held signs saying return to sender. But the ownership that citizens claim upon the United States of America is rooted in an erasure of history and the extermination of millions of Native American people. In a memoir entitled Not From Here, author Alan G. Johnson explores the idea of belonging to a land to which you have emigrated. When his father passed away and he needed to decide where to scatter his ashes, Johnson began a journey that was both geographical and philosophical. Alan Johnson is a sociologist, author, novelist, and public speaker. His books included The Gender Knot, Unraveling Patriarchal Legacy, and The Forest and the Trees, Sociology as Life, Practice and Promise, and Privilege, Power, and Difference. He now joins me to discuss his new book, Not From Here. Welcome to Uprising, Alan.
Thank you, Sonali.
Now, your book begins with a tragedy, the loss of your father, and then it develops into a conundrum, which is where to scatter his ashes. Why was it so confounding for you that your father actually himself didn't quite care where you scattered his ashes? Why was the place of scattering so important for you?
Well, when I first asked him, which was before he died at the age of 93, he said it didn't matter to him at all where his ashes were. It didn't really surprise me. It wasn't a conundrum. He lived all over the world. He was fluent in multiple languages. So it wasn't shocking to me that he might be indifferent to that. But then 3-4 years later, I still had this box with his ashes in it and didn't know what to do with them. And I felt some obligation to do something with them. But for the first time, I realized that I didn't know what to do with them. I didn't know where there would be a piece of land where they would belong. And then as time went on and I kept sitting with this problem, I realized that I didn't know of a piece of land where I would feel like I belonged. And so what started out as fulfilling what seemed to me just to be an obligation to one's father became a journey for myself as much as for him.
Now, why did you not feel like you belonged? You, I'm assuming, were born here in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, there are lots of kinds of belonging, which I didn't realize until I had taken this very long road trip, almost 2,000 miles. I feel belonging in relation to my family, for example. I feel belonging in relation to my community. But what this turned out to be was a journey over land and the question coming up of to what land do I belong? What people am I a part of that is identified with and in some ways defined in relation to a particular land? And I realized that there was no such people that I belonged to belonged to the land in that way. And by belonging to the land, I mean that you look at the land and you see yourself reflected back in some way. Or you look at yourself and you see the land in your face, in your body. Many indigenous peoples in North America have identified themselves in relation to particular kinds of land. And that's something that I became aware that I don't have access to.
Now, your father was from Norway, and like all immigrants to the U.S., your father had a story about why he came to the U.S., where he came from. And did that figure into your journey to figure out how and where to scatter his ashes?
It did. He was born in the United States, as was his father. Mm-hmm. His grandparents emigrated from Norway and became farmers in Iowa. And when I realized that I was wanting to find some piece of land where both the father and his son would feel like they belonged, I began the journey in South Dakota, which is where my father ended his childhood. He went to high school in South Dakota. And then I worked my way backwards to Minnesota, where he was born, and then finally to Iowa, where his father was born and his grandparents emigrated. So that for me, this was the only possible way in which I might find a piece of land that would speak to me in both ways, both for my father and for myself.
Can you read a small portion of your book for our audience? The book is called Not From Here, A Memoir. And I think you say it better in the book than I could bring it out, just in terms of how you draw the connections between this journey that you took and trying to understand the history of the United States.
I'd be happy to. This is before I begin the journey and I've collected maps. I look at my maps of Iowa, Minnesota, and South Dakota, land soaked in blood, spilled and taking it away from peoples who had lived on it for thousands of years and wanted only to go on as before. I have not been searching for that history, which came up briefly and almost by accident. I have been looking for a link between myself and what I imagine to be the land of my ancestors, the people of my origin, wanting to imagine, needing to. Dee Brown writes that the Indians knew that life was equated with the earth, which I think means you cannot understand a life without knowing the land it came from and where it was lived, because the two are one and the same. But I grew up in a society that looks upon land as a temporary place to live, to set up shop, a resource to be seized and controlled and exploited, ruined if need be, in pursuit of wealth and power. The last thing that would occur to us is to look upon the land and see ourselves, or to look deep into our own eyes, our faces, the lines that etch our lives upon our bodies, and see the land. I am a white man, born and raised, the land therefore a mystery to me, making me a mystery to myself. And if Native people are right about the land, then it is not a sort of mystery to be solved like an engineering problem, but instead something that can be known only through the body. And for that, the body must be on the land. What I know about my ancestors and the land has come mostly through books, without the urgency that I am feeling now in these days before I set out on this journey in the middle of my 63rd year, in a way I never would have imagined, through the body of my father.
Alan Johnson reading from his book, Not From Here, a Memoir. Now, your book is a very personal book, and in your earlier writings, you have dealt with issues of privilege, of gender privilege, of racial privilege. How is this book different from your earlier writings, and why?
It's different in that it's the first book I've written that's about me, on some level at any rate, that tells a story about a journey that I myself took. That's the biggest difference. In a couple of ways, it's also a combination of the things I've done before. In my novels, I tell stories, and in my nonfiction work, I've tried to understand how social life works, particularly in relation to issues of privilege and oppression. And this was a book that brought both of those things together. So in a way, it brought two very distinct parts of me into the same narrative. So I'm both telling a story, but it's not simply about me or about my dad. It's also about the larger context that our stories are part of, the larger story, if you will.
There have been a lot of histories written about what the U.S. has done in essentially what the history of the United States has really been in terms of the extermination of Native Americans. Of course, those histories don't necessarily enter mainstream discourse, nor are they necessarily taught adequately at the high school or even college level. Is your book an attempt to bridge the gap between the academic history and people understanding it from a personal level? Because, of course, we are all complicit if we are not Native American ourselves.
Yes. My sense is that for me to understand what I think of as my own story, or even my father's own story, I have to understand it in a larger context, because it doesn't exist otherwise. There is no Alan Johnson, for example, except as a participant in a larger story that extends backward in time through history. So if I want to know who I am, I need to know the story of which my life is a part, and the history of this country, including the horrific parts of that history, are part of, if you will, the web that holds my individual story along with everyone else's individual story. So I don't think it's possible to really understand my own life or anyone's life, and certainly not our lives collectively, except in relation to these larger stories. It's a both and. We have to do both.
So your grandparents came, your father's grandparents came from Norway. So your great-grandparents came from Norway. So that's several generations in the United States. But everybody comes from somewhere, right? So this question of belonging, does it become a matter of where you place the threshold of how long your family has, you know, how many generations your family has been on a certain land?
That's a really good question. I wish I had a nice, simple answer for it, but I don't. My own answer for that question is that the kind of belonging I'm talking about is not possible simply as an individual. I use the word indigenous a great deal to think about this. In order for me to feel indigenous to this place, to this land, a particular piece of land, I have to identify myself as part of a people who are themselves indigenous to that land. And I think, as I understand the word indigenous, what it means is it's to be from someplace in the sense of ultimate origins, deep origins. As a North American, as an American, I come up empty around that because, first of all, there is no American people that I can say, these are my people. These are the people I am from. There is no American ethnicity. And not only that, but the people that are in North America, other than Native Americans, are not from here. We speak the English language, but very few of us are English. Actually, none of us are English except for recent immigrants from England. So there is no sense of my being part of a people whose origination is on this continent. And I don't think you have to, I don't know how, you know, 10,000 years from now, I suppose that might change, or even 1,000 years from now. But certainly now, none of us has to trace our lineage back very far before there is this disconnect where going backwards farther are people who are from somewhere else, who are indigenous somewhere else. So my great-great-grandparents were indigenous to Norway. Actually, my great-grandparents were indigenous to Norway. They were Norwegians. But then everybody going up to now, including myself and my grandchildren, we are not indigenous to Norway. I'm not a Norwegian. I could never be accepted as a Norwegian in the way that a Norwegian immigrant could be accepted as an American. So there is this disconnect for all of us. And the question is, how far back do you have to go for that disconnect to happen? And you have this, what for me was this strange realization that I have ancestors who belong someplace where I don't. And I think that's a key part of the American story.
Right. A key part, and of course, not all of it, because not only were there people who were always here, and then there were people who were brought here forcibly. Yes. And today, there are people who feel compelled to come through economic hardship. And actually, even earlier waves of immigrants felt that as well. You can compare, for example, poor Europeans with poor Central Americans today as well. And all of those are pieces of a larger story of which you write your own personal part.
Yes.
And I'm wondering, you know, you mentioned it, I brought up the issue of the threshold of how long does one have to be someplace to really be considered from here. There was a recent new scientific study that was just published that concluded that all of the various Native American tribes in the United States were found to have descended from Siberia. When they came to this continent, that was 23,000 years ago. And so this is goes back to this issue of everybody does come from somewhere, does migrate from somewhere. How long ago that migration is happened is a question, I suppose, that one can take up when one tries to understand what belonging means.
Yes. And I expect it's much less of an issue for Norwegians in Norway than it is for
And also then there's the issue of displacement, right? Because when you come someplace where there already have been people, where there already have been people living for millennia, and your coming ends up displacing, dispossessing, and exterminating, it's a different... And when I say you, I mean the collective you, right? It's a different kind of migration and creates a different conundrum on the issue of belonging than people coming to a land where there was nobody to begin with necessarily, or people coming to a land without displacing and simply integrating.
I think it's called conquest.
Yeah, let's say it.
That's what we did. That's how we acquired, how Europeans acquired North America. was through conquest and all the ways that gets accomplished. I mean, peoples have been moving for, you know, hundreds of thousands of years. The Norwegians came from somewhere. But as you point out, when they got to Norway, there was, as far as I know, there was relatively little conquest and forcible displacement going on.
You say in your book that, quote, what is going on in this country is about race, and in one way or another has always been about race. And this is an issue that we are grappling with today, more so than in the last few years. And I'm wondering if you can expand on the fact that so much of our history does have to do with organizing along racial lines and conquest, the dynamics between racial groups being about domination and extermination and violence.
If you look at the history, my reading of the history of the United States is that the concept of race as we know it today, especially the concept of whiteness, has a relatively short history. It doesn't go back that many hundreds of years. And it was used as a way of justifying both the seizure of North America from Native Americans, as well as the institution of slavery. And that's where it came from. And so since the seizing of North America was necessary for the United States to even exist, I mean, there would be no United States if the land was not taken from Native Americans. And since the capitalist economic system as we know it was largely driven in the 19th century by the economics of slavery, race is at the center of our story. There's no way to avoid it. And then, of course, once you put in place the ideologies that allow the white population to think that they're doing everything by right because they're superior by virtue of being white, once you put that in place across many generations and give those generations a material investment in that being true, then you've created a monster, which is what all of us have inherited. Each generation of people in the United States of all races have inherited some piece of this monster.
Now, light-skinned immigrants coming to the U.S. have had the luxury of simply becoming white, and we've, you know, heard the histories of how the Irish became white, how the Italians, etc. But in becoming white, didn't they also lose something important, which was their own ethnic heritage? Doesn't adopting whiteness also come with a loss?
Very much so. When I went to Iowa, the tail end of my journey, I went to the land offices. I wanted to see the actual records of my great grandparents buying this land, and I ran into this whole mystery of naming. There are multiple versions of my great grandfather's first name. He changed his last name. The last name he was born with was Mokestad, which is Norwegian for the home of the seagulls, basically. It was the name of the place where he was born. He became Johnson. And the only reason he became Johnson was because he wanted to be accepted as a newly minted American. My grandfather was born with the name Johan, but he didn't die with that. He was died with the name John. So there was this complete cut, not, I wouldn't say it was complete in that generation, but there was this progressive cutting loose of any sense of where they were from. And it began with my great-grandparents. My father, his full name was Valdemar Nels Luther Johnson. But he was born with the name Niels, not Nels. I have a little baby book that was filled in right after he was born. There's no doubt about it. It was Valdemar Nels Luther Johnson. So I realized at some point my father decided that Niels was not the name for him. It was Nels, which is a more anglified version of Niels, sounds less foreign. So to me, there was this progressive process across generations of obliterating, in some ways, their origins. It was not as powerful for my father because he was raised in a household where they spoke Norwegian, which is why he was fluent in Norwegian, which is very unusual, I think, for a third generation to still be speaking English at home. But he had that advantage. So he grew up fluent in four dialects of Norwegian.
Now, of course, today in some parts of the country and in among some sectors of society, we see these attempts by white Americans to celebrate white culture, not Norwegian culture, not English or Irish or Italian culture, what they might be able to trace as part of their own roots, but what they call white culture. And of course, they say, you know, if blacks can have Black History Month, why shouldn't whites have that same sort of thing? That's not what you're talking about when you talk about reclaiming heritage, right?
No, I would say there's no such thing as white culture, except perhaps a white supremacist culture, but white culture that encompasses all of Europe, I don't know of any such culture. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish it.
I was going to say whiteness is a dilemma. I had this come up in a class years ago. I was teaching about race. And white students in the room were somewhat distressed that people of color were asserting a certain pride in being of color. And they wanted to know, was it okay to be proud to be white? And my response to that was that it was really problematic, because it makes sense that people of color who have been denigrated and oppressed on the basis of color for so long would say, well, we're going to turn this into a point of pride. That makes perfect sense. But if you look at the history of whiteness, it has no significance. It's not real, except as an invention, a cultural invention that served the purpose of defending and justifying white privilege and all kinds of horror. So it's to be proud of that, you know, that I should be proud of how my skin color gets categorized doesn't make any sense to me. I haven't done anything. And it's a dilemma. And I think it's a dilemma that white people in North America, we simply have to live with it. It's part of the legacy that's been passed to us. There's no simple solution to it. It can be painful, and that's part of the deal.
And can rediscovering your own ethnic heritage as a white person make you, as well as, of course, familiarizing yourself with the history of the Native American genocide, with the history of the of American institution of slavery, all of that contribute to people understanding about white privilege and becoming more sensitive to issues of race? Are those pieces of a puzzle that people can start exploring?
I think so. And I also think it's not simply a painful exercise. My experience of doing this work over a long period of time, number of decades, is that denial doesn't work very well. Not living in reality is not a good life strategy. So that as difficult as it can be, especially initially, to open myself to the reality of the history of this country and how my ancestors and therefore myself, through by extension, are involved in that history, that's not all bad news. Because as difficult as it is, I also have the benefit of knowing who I am, knowing what was passed to me, knowing that it wasn't my fault. I didn't create any of this. None of us alive today created any of this nightmare. But now it's been passed to us. And for me, it is in some ways, it's liberating to be able to simply acknowledge the fact of the whole story of this country, the whole story of the people that I came from, and the loss that we have suffered as a result of that. If I don't know what has been lost, then I can't respond to that in my own life.
Finally, Alan Johnson, we started our conversation and you started your book with trying to figure out where to scatter your father's ashes and the journey that took you to across the United States. Can you give our audience a brief sort of summary of where that journey took you and whether you feel like you found some peace and maybe gave your father some peace?
The journey started in St. Paul, Minnesota. Mm. And I rented a car and drove across Minnesota into South Dakota. And I wound up unexpectedly driving a good portion of the ways across South Dakota and then back again, visiting places that I knew from my father that he had experienced. And I wound up in Iowa. This was almost 2,000 miles, this journey, with my father in his box in my knapsack on the seat next to me in the car. It was a very quiet journey for me. I realized after I got back that I never once turned on the car radio in 10 days and 2,000 miles. Never even occurred to me. So that I was crossing land in a state of not only solitude, although in some ways my father was keeping me company, but also silence. And I think the silence was essential for me to be able to hear what the land, for one thing, I think was saying to me repeatedly, which was not a hostile rejection, but it was saying to me, you know, this is not where you're from, and this is not where your father is from. And as that message sunk in deeper and deeper, and I crossed land that I knew the history of, I came deeper, I think, into questions about who am I? Who are we? Who is the we of which I'm a part? Where are we from? And in many ways, I came home with those questions still. I didn't come home with some epiphany and answer to all these problems, because I think, frankly, that my understanding of the place of all these questions in my life as a white person in North America is that how I live my life now is my response to these kinds of questions.
Right.
How am I going to be an American citizen, knowing what I know, not only about my family, but about my country?
Well, I want to thank you very much, Alan Johnson, for spending this time with us, and good luck with your journey. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sanal.
My guest, Alan Johnson, is a sociologist, a public speaker, and novelist, and we've been talking. He also writes nonfiction. The latest in that category is his book, a memoir called Not From Here, that we've been discussing.